It's taken me forever to find that clip. I've wanted to use that clip so many times, but could never find it until I finally figured out how to search for it. And the name of the commercial was called Career Maker. And that's actually what I ended up having to search just by accident. I think it was like one of those divine moments. It's one of my favorite all-time commercials because I remember it. And it's this guy who's sitting around a board table. You know how it is when you start a new job and you're sitting there and you're around a board table and you're scared to say anything for a fact. If you realize, if I just keep my mouth shut, I can look a lot smarter than I really am. But if I open my mouth, everybody's going to realize just how dumb I really am. And so you just sit there and you're quiet the whole time. And so this guy utters this one thing. He's scared to death. And he's like, if you're shipping internationally, you got to use FedEx. And it works. And then he just lives on that for the rest of his life. And we all know somebody like that who's just living on a glory from 20 years ago when they made that one right decision and they're still basking in it and talking about it. And I love how, like, you got this guy who's, like, sitting on a park bench. So I said, and then he gets to the point where it's his funeral and they're up at the funeral saying, you know, we all know him for that one time way back when. And that often can become the story of our faith journey with God, where our faith journey quits looking like a Twitter update and starts looking more like a Wikipedia page. You know, where a bunch of people wrote around and, you know, said this is what this person did instead of this is what God is actively doing. And I think about this a lot as a church plant. As many of y'all know, when we hit our fourth anniversary this year, I kind of freaked out a little. And I still am. And the reason why is because I remember back how it was that first year. And the first year was crazy. We had 4 months to have this church go from a vision and a mind to a reality that you see. And it was just amazing. I mean, the stories we have from back then are just, I love whenever somebody tells me, what was it like those 4 months? Just this past week, as a guy who's looking to plant a church, and he came to me and says, so tell me about what it was like to plant the church. And I'm like, I just love telling the story. I got to the point where we didn't have enough time to finish. I was like, let's do another lunch so I can finish telling you the story, because I love telling the story. I mean, we had all of those great hallmark moments of a God story. Like, we didn't have any money. And the first bill we got in was $400, and what do you know, there was a check that came in the mail. Anybody know those stories? We had. Every one of those you can imagine, we had. We had to figure out where we were going to meet, because we were a church with a dream with no place to meet. And it came to the point where I knew that we had to know the meeting date by, it was a Friday in December, like around December 14th or so. And sure enough, on Wednesday, I get a phone call asking if I can have an appointment on Thursday to talk with somebody about where we're going to meet. And it was this place that was the last place on earth you'd expect. We had more prayers of desperation in that time. And the reason why, you pray those prayers of desperation where you're absolutely terrified because you get to your last option that you have and it falls through. And you're like, okay, I don't have any other choice. I guess I'll have to pray. And you know, we laugh, but let's face it. I'm your pastor, and I go through those moments too. And because all of us love to be in control of our environment, our setting, and our circumstance, and all of us want to live a life, especially a life with God even, where we kind of have reached that point of mastery. Isn't that kind of our goal in life, every stage of life that we're in? That, you know, I want to get to the point of mastery in my marriage so I can just kind of cruise and it's not a work anymore. Right? Anybody with me? Well, maybe you don't want to share that. I want to get to the point as a parent where, don't you see some of those other parents? And you just watch them walk in. They've got a baby on the hip. They've got another one. They've got their oldest carrying the other baby. And they're just kind of walking in. And they can just mother without even thinking about it. And you're sitting there with your hair all pulled out. And you're like, someday I want to be like that woman right there. You know, then you got others that just, you know, they got their financial life down. I mean, they can quote Dave Ramsey like it's going out of style and they got everything in order. And at work, you see those people that you work with and they can do the job without even thinking. We want to get to that point. But then God seems to like call us beyond the areas of our own self-mastery into the areas of the unknown. And it's at those times we got to hit the refresh button on our faith, which we're going to be talking about this morning, where God's calling you to go further and farther than your own self-mastery can take you. And our motto when we started this church was, if it were easy, we wouldn't need God. And that's a sobering truth, isn't it? It's almost as though God has to put stumbling blocks in front of us, because if he doesn't, at some point we're going to be like, what do I need God for? I can do this all on my own. And after all, that's part of my goal anyway, isn't it? To get to the point where I don't need to rely on anybody else, especially not God, because the scary thing about God is that God comes through at just the right time. With perfect timing. And we say that we love perfect timing, but perfect timing is where if you were riding in a car with God and God was in the passenger seat, And you'd be right on, you'd see a red light. And he'd say, step on it, it's going to turn. And you're like, but what if nobody else stops? Trust me, I already know what everybody else is going on. Just floor it. You're good. Are you going to want to hit the front of that intersection at 55 miles an hour? Knowing that if that light doesn't turn green, and let's just say, let's add to the fun, there's a cop sitting there on the other side. And you're looking at him, and he's like, yeah, hit it. Trust me, it'll be green when you hit the line. Perfect timing. We say we love perfect timing. When God comes in at just the right time, it is terrifying right up until the very last second. And we're going to look at the life of a guy named Joshua. If there was ever a guy who could have coasted without ever hitting a refresh button on his faith, it's Joshua. You know, he wrote a book called Joshua, which is really the story of him hitting the refresh button on his faith. And you can read all about Joshua before you get to the life of Joshua, or before you get to the book of Joshua. I mean, Joshua already was an old man by the time this book starts. Okay, he was probably in his... He was older than me. Around the age of some of you. And there was a lot of life left in him. And I'll let you study your Bible to find out just how old he was. All right, almost stepped into one there. But here's where he was at. Here's his faith journey before he ever pins anything that happens in the book of Joshua. Okay? He was a slave in Egypt. And he watched God miraculously deliver them out of Egypt. He was there with his family when either he or his dad ate the very first Passover meal. They had a lamb dinner, and they took the blood of the lamb, and they spread it on the doorpost on the side, and they all went to bed that night. And they woke up the next morning to absolute pandemonium and chaos among everybody in Egypt, and every family that had done what they had done was spared. The angel of death had passed over them, but had wreaked chaos over everyone else in town, for the firstborn of every family in the city, in the nation of Egypt, was killed. He lived through that. He lived to tell about that. And they walked out of town with the people of Egypt just handing them their goods and stuff. It's almost like as if they plundered the spoils of Egypt without ever having conquered them. They just would give them gold to buy them favor just to get them out of town. And they get out of town, and here's Joshua, part of this group that's coming out of town, and all of a sudden Pharaoh changes his mind, and they look behind him, and the world's most powerful army is coming down upon them. And Moses prays, and Moses holds out his hands, and you see the wind's blowing in his face, and he's got the beard and everything, and you see Charlton Heston Moses there just parting the Red Sea, and he actually was one of the guys who walked through the Red Sea on dry ground. He lived that. He would go to bed every night, and he'd see this magical pillar of fire in the air telling them that they were safe. And then by day, that fire at night would turn into a smoke cloud by day, and it would lead them through the desert. He was there when Moses went up on the mountain and came back down. He actually had a story where he actually was one of the covert ops who went into the promised land to check it out. And he was actually one of only two guys who came back and said, we can do this. And he easily could have lived out the rest of his life going, well, there was this one time when I went to the land and I said, we can do it. So these other guys didn't have a clue. And I told them we could do it. I mean, he could be the FedEx guy if he wanted to, because he had the story where he said the right thing at the right moment. He was there at Moses' tent when Moses would be inside talking to God, and he could like eavesdrop on the conversation. Wouldn't that be amazing? I mean, he had enough faith stories to tell his grandkids and his great-grandkids without them ever getting bored. Granddad, tell me again the story about you walking through the Red Sea. But he comes to a point in his life where God says, all right, I'm tired of reading your Wikipedia page about your faith walk with me. I want a Twitter post. I want a Facebook status. I want to know what's going on right now. Let's click that refresh button and go somewhere new. And it's because he does that he's able to, and I'm going to jump ahead of the story, and then we're going to go back to chapter 1. But I just want to read you one verse out of chapter 3 and tell me if this is the kind of thing that you would like to have happen in your life. This is the kind of phrase you'd like to be able to say someday. He looks at the people around him and he says, consecrate yourselves. This is Joshua chapter 3, verse 5. He says, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. You get a good night rest. And you pray and you make sure you're right with God. Because tomorrow, God's going to do something that's going to blow your mind. Isn't that a good prayer? I mean, don't you love it as dad when you get to tell your kids, listen, we're going to get a good night's sleep because tomorrow you're going to Disney World. You don't know what Disney World is, but it will blow your mind. It is worth going to bed at 6 o'clock tonight so we can get up at 6 a.m. tomorrow and be the first ones to walk across a line where they're going to hold up a rope and they're going to drop it. We're going to be the first ones to hit this thing called Space Mountain. You don't know what it is right now, but you will be talking about it for the rest of your life. Consecrate yourselves tonight. For tomorrow, Daddy is going to show you amazing things. We love doing that as dad. God loves to do that in your life. And what if you were living the kind of life where your faith was so fresh that you were led to moments where you could look to those around you and say, consecrate yourself tonight, for tomorrow the Lord is going to do amazing things among us. So how did that refresh button happen in his life? Well, if you go back to Joshua chapter 1, Joshua begins to tell the story of a refresh on his faith, and he begins the story where it all began for him, and that is with this very difficult moment. And by the way, faith moments are never easy. When you hit the refresh button on faith, it's not an easy moment. It's often found in a very difficult time, when there's something that's beyond you. And so for him, it says, Joshua chapter 1, very first line of his book, the beginning of his story, the narrative that he's going to tell, the beginning of his faith experience, and the wild ride that God is going to lead him on begins under the most difficult of circumstances. And it says, Moses, my servant is dead. Moses, my servant is dead. That's how the book begins. And the Lord says to Joshua, Moses, my servant is dead. Now you. And what happens sometimes for some of us to hit the reset button on our faith, to kind of refresh our faith, for some of us what this means is that we move from living under the coattails, under the wings of somebody else's faith that has protected us and guided us and led us and told us step by step where we need to go next. For some of us to hit the refresh button on our faith is where we begin to blaze our own trail because the wing of protection that we've been living under is now gone. You know, for some of you it's when you get moved to a new area and you no longer have this church. You no longer have the church you grew up with or the pastor you grew up with or someone who just kind of give you and guide you. And for some of you, it's I know for me, I had one of these moments. I remember my very first night at college, which is, this whole sermon series is kind of based on kind of this whole new start of a new school year and the thoughts that are going through your head with a new year. And I remember my very first night at college. And you cannot wait for your parents to get in the car and leave. I mean, love you, mom and dad. Give me some money before you head out. That'd be great. It's gravy. Even if you don't, I don't care. Just get in the car. Go. I'm on my own. I've been waiting 18 years for this. Goodbye. And they walk out, and you're like, yes. You go upstairs, and you chill in your dorm. This is amazing. Let's see what there's to do. And I remember for me, dinner time hit. And I was like, huh. Now, I didn't have the meal plan. I had a different plan. I was actually going to be working at a sorority house serving meals to hot chicks. And, hey, they said you can pay $2,000 to buy food in the cafeteria or for free you can go to the girls' sorority on campus and give them meals and you can sit down and eat with them. I'm no dummy. Say, they had a pool table and they told me I could shoot pool in the sorority house till 9 o'clock at night, any night I wanted to. I was on my fraternity's pool team by the end of the semester. No lie. Seriously. Different story. I digress. But that first night, sorority's thing hadn't started yet. And I'm sitting there like, okay, what do I do for food? And I remember my first thought was, what's mom making? No lie. That was my first thought. And then it hit me, ain't no mama. And I didn't have a car. I didn't have a meal plan. I didn't even know where the cafeteria was. I didn't know where anything was. I was just, my only focus was to get rid of mom and dad. And now I realize they're gone. And it was that Moses, my servant, is dead and gone kind of moment. And I did what I called the vending machine buffet. I had quarters. My mom had given me rolls of quarters to do laundry with. And I just went down and soda, candy bar, honey bun, you name it, I had it. And that was my dinner that first night. But it was the night I realized I was on my own. And you have those moments. I had another one of those moments the night I came home from the hospital after Melissa had passed. And I gathered up the three kids into my bed and we laid there and they cuddled up next to me. And That was the first moment it hit me. I don't have somebody else to parent these kids. And I'll be honest with you. I didn't parent those kids. She did. Like a lot of you other men in this room. You just say, whatever you want, honey, sure, I'll be here. Whatever you ask me to do, I'll do. I mean, she knew all the medicines to give them. She knew their schedules. She knew everything. I'd done it for a week. That was it. And I realized, okay, you got to step up and figure this out. It was terrifying. And we have those moments in life, and we have those moments in our faith walk with God where you're kind of shoved out of the nest and you're on your own now. And God would go on to say to Joshua, he says, be careful that you obey all of the law of my servant Moses gave you. Don't turn from the left or the right that you might be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always before your lips and meditate on it day and night so that you might be careful of everything written in it so that you'll be prosperous and successful. Basically saying, listen, Joshua, up until now, I've been telling Moses what to do and you've just been following his lead. You don't have Moses tell you what to do now. She's not there to tell you how to parent. Mama's not there to cook you meals. You're on your own. You actually have to get to the point where you're reading in the Bible what it says for you to do. And that's a refresh moment on your faith. There's a time where you're just looking at everybody else around you to kind of, I don't know what the right thing is to do. I'll just look and see what Ralph's doing. I'll just ask my pastor what I should do. There comes a certain moment in life where all of a sudden you've got to pick up your Bible, open it up for yourselves, and you've got to read and you've got to discern and you've got to figure out what is the next step that we need to go as a family or in my life. One of our four hearts that we always talk about in our discipleship path, we talk about, there's, if you look at our logo, it's four interlocking hearts. And we are like, huh? Just look at it again. It's four interlocking hearts. There's a heart up, which is all about worship and just knowing that we got to come before God and lift him up. And that's kind of what we primarily focus on here in this room. There's a heart going to the side, which reminds us that we need to be loving others who are doing life just like we are. And that's primary context for the small groups. Another heart going the other side, which is loving others around us who maybe aren't anything like us. That's where we serve, and that's where we serve inside the church and serve in children's ministry and in the foyer and greeters and in the parking lot and even outside these walls and mission opportunities. And there's also the heart that goes down. This is that we need to remind ourselves, we need to love ourselves enough to live a holy life. And for some of you, that's the next big step you need to take in your faith walk is take ownership over your walk and quit blaming somebody else. Quit blaming your spouse or quit blaming your pastor or your former pastor or your former church for where you're at or where you're not at with God. And you just need to take ownership of it and say, I am where I am because of the choices I have made, and I will take responsibility for that this morning. It is now on me to read everything in the book of the law and do what it says. And if I do that and be careful to obey it, then I will see success wherever I go. So for some of you, to refresh your faith means simply to take ownership of your life in that way. And for Joshua, it was that. And then the next thing that he moves to is hitting that refresh button might mean that you need to begin to realize that your faith is no longer just about you. It's where you realize your faith is no longer just about you. Your relationship with God is no longer just about you. There's actually other people who are depending on your relationship with God and your walk and for you to get your junk together with God. Flat out. He says, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you lead all these people to get ready to cross the Jordan that I'm about to give them. You know, there comes a moment in your life where you realize that God's goal in your life is to be more than just your psychotherapist, to help you get your stuff worked out, help you deal with your past, help you deal with the sin problems in your life. You realize that God has, he wants to be more in your life than just your personal mentor for your own personal good. And you realize that God is calling you to do something and affect something in the lives of the people around you. And so often as Christians, we bemoan the fact that we're the only Christian where we work. If God would just send me somebody else that, you know, can help me along in my walk. It's so difficult. And so, or maybe if you're a student, you bemoan the fact that nobody else from the church goes to your school. You're the only one, and you just wish you had some friends from church who would go here to make it easier for you and to help encourage you and then to make it easier for you to blaze a trail of faith and to share the gospel maybe with others. And you come to realize maybe this is one of those moments where God is calling you not to look for Moses where you're at, but to be the Moses where you're at. And God would go on to say to Joshua in this chapter, he says, listen, just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. Moses is gone. You're now the Moses to these people. It's now your job to pick up the mantle of leadership. I haven't experienced this personally, but I've talked with many people who've gone down the road, and I don't know what it's like to lose a parent. I don't know what that's like. I know what it's like to lose a wife, but I don't know what it's like to lose a parent, and there's something very unique about it. And I'm not looking forward to the experience. But what I hear over and over again is I just feel alone. I feel like I'm an orphan now. I don't know what it is. I'm 50 years old, and yet I feel kind of lost now. Because it's that moment where you don't have dad that you can just pick up the phone and call, and many of us take that for granted. And Moses is at that point where he realizes, I've got a family, I've got a nation that's looking to me to make a right choice, and it's up to me to do it. You see, it's that moment where you begin to realize that there are people around you that are either married to you, parented by you, led by you, influenced by you, that need you to get that first stuff we talked about together. They need you following, and they need you trusting. They need you studying your word. Why? Because they're looking to you to set the moral example for their life. They're looking to you to give them some guidance on where they should turn. And when they look to you, you're either going to let them down, or you're going to point them closer to Christ. So at some point in your faith journey, you begin to look up and realize that other people are depending on me to make right choices and make wise choices and lead them where they want to go. And then lastly, this one I want to spend a little more time on. This is the scary one. So sometimes refreshing of faith means realizing that it's now depending upon us to take ownership of our life and our walk with God. Sometimes hitting that refresh button for you right now in your life might be realizing that other people are depending on you to make wise choices in the moment. But sometimes we need to hit the refresh button simply because your faith no longer terrifies you. You see, we get to the point where we can walk with God on autopilot. Joshua is having this conversation with God, and God says to him, listen, Joshua, here's the deal. Every place where you set your foot, just as I promised Moses, I'm going to give you. And your territory is going to extend from the desert of Lebanon to the great river of Euphrates. This is chapter 1, verse 3 of Joshua. All the Hittite country to the Mediterranean Sea to the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. Just as I was with Moses, so I'll be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. So be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Be strong and be very courageous. Then he goes into saying, be careful, obey everything I've told Moses to do and walk in his laws and his precepts. And then he says once again, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Like, I don't remember if I said this. I want to make sure I say this before I'm finished. I want to make sure I get this one thing. Did I mention earlier I need you to be strong and courageous? Because I didn't. I just want to make sure I say it one more time. Just make sure it's out there, because you need to be strong and courageous. And don't be afraid and don't be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Sometimes I get asked, what's the difference between faith and belief? Aren't they the same? Are they synonyms? Are they parallel? This verse gives you a really good context for an answer. There's many ways to answer the question. One of the many ways to answer the question is, belief will not scare you, but faith will. Belief will not ask you to do anything that's terrifying. But faith will push you to move you into the unknown, into the uncertain. Because faith is where you act on what you believe. See, I can sit in church. You all can sit in here and be believers. We can be believers at church, and we can be believers anywhere by ourselves without doing anything. We can ride on the golf course and tell of the stories of old, of all the things God did in our life as believers. But once you move from belief to faith, you're stepping out into an unknown. You're stepping out into that which might be very terrifying. And that FedEx guy was unwilling to ever step out in an unknown again. And so there's this Wikipedia page, and that's why I love at the funeral. The guy says, and we all know, whatever his name is, for always saying that one thing. And I'm amazed at the fact that Joshua is advanced in years and yet doesn't want to be defined by what happened in his 20s, in his 30s, in his 40s, in his 50s, and perhaps even his 60s. But here he is now at this stage of life. He says, I'm ready for another round. I'm ready to do this all again. I'm ready to step out into the unknown and see wherever God is going to lead us. And I realize it's more than just me that's depending on this. It's this whole nation that's dependent upon this. And what he ends up leading them to do is the very first thing they've got to do is cross over the Jordan River. And you kind of think to yourself, okay, well, Moses, they crossed the Red Sea. He's got to cross the Jordan River. And you might look at the outside in and go, well, Moses had it much harder. Well, God kind of changes some stuff around on him. Number one, crossing a river is just as daunting as crossing an ocean, if the river is moving quite fast. And we always get these different pictures in our mind of rivers. For me, the only way I can think about this is I think about the Mississippi River. And just think about the Mississippi River, not just at normal stage, because at normal stage it's very dangerous. While I was in seminary living in New Orleans, there was actually a barge that crashed right into Riverwalk. And it's because there's this very tricky turn right where New Orleans, the city of New Orleans is, that if you mess up coming around that turn, there's a point of no return where the river is going to take you where it wants to take you. Even a barge with tugboats around it from pilots who know how to drive these things and do it for a living, if you get in the wrong place, it doesn't matter how good your tugboat is. They were able to radio in and say, I missed the turn, I'm crashing. That's how powerful the river can be. And just to add to the ante and to the fun of the whole matter, it says in the text that the Jordan River is at flood stage. And if you've seen any of the pictures of what's going on in Colorado right now, you know just how dangerous flood stage is. The river isn't just confined within its banks. It is wide and it is big and it is nasty and has taken anybody in its path with them. And if you look on Yahoo News and you just update it and keep refreshing it, you'll see that the death toll continues to increase from the flood. And this is a thing that Joshua was facing. And when Moses went to part the Red Sea, granted they had the added fun element of having Pharaoh's army coming down on them. So Moses stands back and he holds out his arms and he does that great scene. As we, you know, it was in the opener of our last series, and he parts. They had a film crew right there when he was doing it. It was amazing. And they parted the Red Sea. Joshua goes to the people and he says, here's the deal. Here's what God told me to do. We need to go walk out into the river. And somewhere between the first step in and being swept away, God's going to do what only God can do. And it's at that moment where you're kind of thinking, hey, my grandpa said that when Moses did this trick, we all just stood behind him and waited till it was all done, and then we walked through. So what's with the whole walk out into flood stage dangerous rivers thing? And Joshua's like, well, I'm pretty sure that's what God said to do, and that's what we need to do. We need to walk out into the river till we get to the point where if God doesn't come through for us, we get swept away. That's the plan. I think that's a crazy plan. But when God is leading you by faith, there are often times where you got to make that make or break moment. And launching this church was all about that. I just keep going back to that. And there were these moments where, you know, I would literally say, God, if you don't come through for us this moment, we're done. That's it. And we had these crazy, I mean, other things like, you know, from the very start, we gave at least 10% of everything that was given to us in missions. Remember somebody once asked me, he says, no, what do you see, how are y'all doing financially? And I said, well, we're losing money every month. And at the rate we're going right now, we got about 6 months to live. I said, what do you mean? I said, well, if the next 6 months are like our past six, we got about 6 months to live. Like, doesn't that scare you? I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of used to it now, though. So you're used to it? I was like, yeah. And they said, well, let me get this straight about missions. You're still giving to missions even though you're losing money and they very well could close your doors in 6 months. I said, yep. He says, how does that make sense? I said, it makes perfect sense when you think about it from a standpoint. Here's the deal. We're not guaranteed tomorrow as a church. This whole endeavor could only last 6 months and be done. And I might buy us one extra month by cutting off all missions giving. However, if we do missions giving, and we do it, let's just say we only last 9 months as a church, and we die as a church and we go by the wayside and there's never any mention of Essential Church ever again, at the very least we'll have been given to a mission and a ministry somewhere else that will survive. So you tell me what makes more sense, giving away 10% towards another endeavor or hoarding it all for myself in the hopes that I come out somehow survive. All my eggs are in one basket if I hoard. But if we give away, even if we go by the wayside, there's going to be another ministry somewhere else. And by the way, I mentioned at the beginning that we our very first bill that we had was $400, and we didn't have money at the time. And first check I got in the mail was $400. And that $400 actually came from a guy who tried to start a church, and it didn't work out. And he sent out a memo to everybody who was a church planner and said, hey, here's the deal. It's the money that was given to me, and it wasn't a whole lot of money, but my church thing didn't work out. If anybody else out there is looking to start a church, let me know, and I'll give the money to you. And I think, I don't know how many of us emailed in, and he decided to take all the money, and he'd split it up amongst everybody who sent him an email. And that portion was $400. So, someday, his name's Tom. Someday Tom's going to walk into heaven, and he's going to probably feel like, you know, God, I know I failed at that whole church thing. And he's like, yeah, but you thought I was doing something in you, but really I was planting seed. I was using you to plant seeds somewhere else. And he's going to turn around and say, did you see what's going on over here because of what you did? That's a faith step. And as a pastor, I got to tell you, this is a weird thing. They told me that it would happen, and it happens. You start off as a church planner, you can take on the world because you don't care about anything. You've got nothing to lose because you have nothing. And then as a church, you finally get to the point where you have something. And you're finally old enough that you can utter the phrase, we've never done it that way before. Because when you're new, you just say, we've never done that. And it's easy to do things when you've never done that. But when you have a way that you've done it before, it becomes very difficult to do things a different way. And we're now to the point where we finally can do things a different way, and it's scary. But we know that if we're going to keep our faith fresh, and we're going to keep alive, and we're going to keep in step with God, we got to keep doing things a different way as we continue to grow. And this is where it gets really terrifying. As I look out, there's not a lot of empty seats in this room. And there's been this sort of low drum beat in the background of this church that basically says, okay, you're okay right now, but at some point you're going to need to make a decision. What are you going to do about space? And we're coming up on the brink of having to do that in this next semester, the next few months. We're going to have to make a decision. What do? Do we build? Do we go all out and become one of those churches that builds a big building? I don't want to do that. Do we go multi-site? Do we, you know, start another venue, another campus somewhere with, like, you know, the whole video venue thing, or me driving around town? I hear one pastor even had a helicopter for it. I don't know. I don't want to do that either. You know what I want? I want to do what I'm doing right now every Sunday for the rest of my life. Anybody with me on that? But God ain't staying here. He will not allow us to continue to do what we're doing right now for the rest of our life. He's calling us beyond and calling us to move beyond into an uncertain future that I don't know yet. And at some point in the next few months, I'm going to stand up here and say, we've prayed, our elders have met, we've looked at and we've looked and we've researched and we've studied. And this is where we feel like God is leading us next. And you're going to look at me going, are you crazy? I'm going to say, you know, the crazy thing is to do is to sit and not move. At some point, you got to step out into the river and say, God, if you don't come through for me, this is going to be a mess. Because just like you, I want to plod right on with you. We're talking about planning Christmas. And we've always done 3 Christmas Eve services. And they said, what about doing a 4th? I looked at them and said, I don't want to do 4. Do you realize 4? No. Let's do 2. But 2 is not very fresh. And God's saying, Steve, you've got to hit the refresh button here. There's folks in your church that need to refresh their faith and where they're at personally. So we can step into the future that is very uncertain, very unknown. And it's going to take a faith that's alive and active and not dead. It's going to take you getting in the Word and studying to see what it says so you can be close to God. And it'll be terrifying. But it's going to be an amazing story. And if you were told the story ahead of time, you'd say, I want to be a part of that. I want to be in on that. I want to be on that team. I want to be in that game. I want to share in that. And whether that be something going on in this life of this church or something going on in your life personally, you're going to want in on that. But you've got to right now hit the refresh and say, God, I'm willing to go wherever you lead. Whatever you want from me, I'll do. The kind of songs we're singing about stepping into a faith in the world unknown, I'll do. I'm not going to coast anymore. Would you join with me as we close out? Father, I know the power of a message like this that's from your word. It's one that's going to lead people here to wonder, Father, are you really leading me to step out? And Father, may they do that not with unguided principles or crazy gusto or just for the thrill-seeking thrill nature of it. But Father, may they go if you're leading them to go. And may they step out, Father, if that's what a faith step for them is right in this moment. For some of us, Lord, it's just simply to take ownership for ourselves of where we're going right now with you. And quit blaming or depending on anybody else to be you in our lives, Father, but just to get a relationship with you alone. For others, it means just to recognize that there are people who are depending on us and looking to us to take another faithful step towards you. And Father, instead of just praying that somebody else would pick up that mantle in my family or in my life, I need to be the Moses for them. And Father, forgive us for wanting to live a safe faith, for wanting to stay here any longer. Because Father, you're always on the move. And may we follow you into the unknown and give someone else the gift of going second. And in Jesus' name, amen. For some of you, that refresh button right now is just simply to take ownership for your own life, your own walk with God, your own sin, the own junk you've got in your own life. And you got to get that straight this morning. You got to get it dealt with this morning. You can't put it off another day. And just say, God, I'm going to own it. Here's my deal. Here's where I'm messing up. Here's what I'm doing wrong in my life. And so, God, just like get that. I put that at your feet. That's exactly what God asks and wants from you. He just says, will you just come and receive the free gift of grace that I'm giving you? I gave my life so that you might have a new start. No matter what you've done, no matter what road you go down, it's amazing that it's almost impossible to disqualify yourself for being used by God. Because he wants to make you new and afresh. And if you look at the tattered crew of men and women that he has used over time, your sin ain't got nothing on them. So come and receive the grace he offers you. I'm going to ask if our praise team will come up at this time as they prepare to lead us. I want you to just prepare your hearts and say, God, what is it in me that I need to ask forgiveness for this morning? What we do is we just come down the center aisles, we turn down the sides, and everyone who's coming forward in this room is giving you an open testimony to say, I'm a sinner and I need grace and I need forgiveness. Because if you're sinless, stay right where you're at and don't even bother coming forward because you don't need it. But if, like others in the room, you need grace, then come. If you want somebody to pray with you this morning, Pastor Bobby and myself will be up here. Whatever's on your heart, maybe you've got a faith step in your life you're contemplating. Maybe you're in a situation where you're knee-deep out in a river. And if God doesn't come through for you, you don't know what's going to happen. You just want somebody else to pray with you. Pastor Bobby and myself are here for you. If you need to just ask Jesus Christ to come into your life, if you want to do that at the altar by yourself, or you want Pastor Bobby and myself to pray with you, we will. Just come and find us. We're usually tucked right behind where they're serving communion. I just invite you to come. Communion is open to anybody and everybody who wants to receive the free gift of grace that God provides for you. And he says, come and eat in remembrance of what I've done. So will you